Well, hello, boys and girls, and welcome to Reading with Rick again. And we're all set to go with a couple of more stories for you tonight. What have we got tonight? We're going to have The Lion King and The Jungle Book. So if you like animal adventures, tonight is your night, especially to start the night. The Lion King, A Wild Night Out, and The Jungle Book, Mowgli's Great Story. That's going to start the night. And then we're going to finish it off with the Magic Treehouse trip tonight. A Mission from Merlin, Season of the Sandstorms. That'll be our finishing book tonight. So if you're all settled in, let's get started with tonight's episode of Reading with Rick, and we start with The Lion King, A Wild Night Out. It was late at night in the Pride Lands. In their den, the lions were all fast asleep. All, that is, except for Simba. Simba just wasn't tired. Suddenly, the little prince heard a noise coming from outside. Simba perked up his ears and listened harder. Scratch, scratch! There it was again, a strange scratching, snuffling sound. Simba carefully moved away from his mother and padded over to where Nala was sleeping.
Nala, wake up, he whispered.
Nala yawned. Her eyes fluttered open slightly before closing again. Oh, it's you, Simba, she groaned. Go back to sleep. I was having the nicest dream.
But there's something outside, Simba said. Come on, don't you want to find out what it is?
Nala opened her eyes again, this time more slowly.
Right now? But it's so dark.
So, Simba replied, grinning, you're not scared, are you?
Who, me?
Nala sprang up like a grasshopper. Of course I'm not scared, she told Simba. Let's go. Together, Simba and Nala tiptoed past their mothers and the rest of the sleeping pride. They paused at the edge of the den and peered out into the night.
Scratch, scratch. What was that? Nala asked.
I told you there's something out there, Simba said. He squinted his eyes.
See anything?
Nala shook her head.
Nope, do you?
Simba poked his head out a little farther.
Nothing, he said.
He was just pulling his head back into the den when a big clump of dirt landed right in the middle of his face.
Look, over there, Nala said as Simba pawed the dirt off his nose.
Simba followed her gaze, his bright eyes growing round. A shadowy figure shuffled out from behind a tall mound of dirt. The creature looked like it had two tails, one on the front of its body and one in the back.
What is it? Nala asked.
Simba shrugged. Whatever it was the strangest-looking animal he'd ever seen. Simba wasn't about to let this mystery go unsolved.
Hello, he called. Hey, you, over there.
Startled, the creature looked up.
Are you lost? Nala asked. Why aren't you home in bed sleeping?
I'm an aardvark, the creature replied, walking away from the cubs. We sleep during the day and play all night. Right now, it's my breakfast time.
I wish we could sleep all day and play all night, Simba said.
He looked up at the branch of a nearby tree where the bossy hornbill Zazu was perched fast asleep. Then there would be no Zazu awake to spy on us all day and tell us what to do. Simba and Nala hurried after the aardvark, who had gone back to digging. The cubs watched wide-eyed as the aardvark stuck his gooey tongue into the hole he'd made in the side of a large mound. When he pulled it out, they could see that his tongue was even longer than Simba's tail and completely covered with fat, squirmy termites. When the aardvark had eaten his fill of bugs, he turned away and started to waddle off into the night.
Wait, Simba called, where are you going?
To find my friends, the aardvark said. Do you want to come?
Simba and Nala knew a good invitation when they heard one. Without another thought, they bounded after the aardvark. The cubs hadn't gone far when Simba stepped on something sharp.
Ouch! He cried, looking at his foot.
A little needle was sticking out of it.
Nala peered around. "Look," she said, "they're everywhere. What are they?"
"Sorry," a voice behind them said. "I can't help it. Sometimes they just fall off by themselves."
Simba and Nala spun around. Behind them was a little creature with lots of sharp needles all over his back. "What are all those spines for?" Simba asked.
"Let's just say they keep anyone from bothering me," the porcupine answered with a wink.
Just then, Simba realized that the aardvark had gotten ahead of them. The cubs chased after him and found him talking to a spring hare with a long, long tail and short front legs. The spring hare suggested a jumping contest, and Nala and Simba accepted right away. They'd always thought of themselves as good pouncers. After all, they practiced every day.
"You might want to reconsider," the aardvark said.
Simba laughed, but one jump into the contest, his laughter faded. The spring hare had jumped 3 times as far as the cubs. After 2 jumps, she had practically disappeared. Simba and Nala knew when they were beat. Turning around, they walked back over to where the aardvark was happily digging.
"Are you hungry?" the aardvark asked Simba and Nala.
The cubs' stomachs grumbled. They weren't used to being up so late after dinner.
"A little," Simba admitted.
But when Simba and Nala saw what the aardvark was eating, they decided maybe they weren't quite so hungry after all. "Do you have anything else to eat?" Simba asked.
"You mean besides termites?" the aardvark asked.
He thought for a minute. Then he bounded off a few feet.
"Take a look at this," he called back to them.
"What is it?" Nala asked.
"Ants," the aardvark answered, "though I usually save those for dessert."
Suddenly, a cold wind ruffled the cub's fur. "Did it just get darker?" Simba asked, shivering.
"And colder?" Nala asked.
Nala and Simba both yawned. The night had been quite an adventure, but they were both starting to get tired. The idea of their cozy den was calling them back home. But as Simba looked around, he realized he didn't have any idea where the den was. "Which way did we come from?" Simba asked. Nala looked around. "I'm not sure," she said. "It's too dark." The cubs searched for something familiar, a landmark that might help them find their way home. But nothing looked right in the dark. They couldn't see far enough. "I guess we'll have to stay here until morning," Simba said with a sigh. He turned to the aardvark. "How long until sunrise?"
"Sunrise," the aardvark said. "It's not even time for lunch."
"Wait," Nala cried suddenly. High above them, the clouds had parted, revealing the moon. Its light shone on the path Simba and Nala had been looking for. In the distance, they could see Pride Rock. The cubs said goodbye to their new friends and hurried back home. Tiptoeing into their den, they saw that everyone was still asleep. Happily, Simba and Nala snuggled in close to their mothers. "Good night, Simba," Nala purred. "See you in the morning," Simba paused to yawn.
"What's for breakfast, do you think?"
"Anything sounds good," Nala said, "as long as it's not bugs." And that's the end of that story. That was a good one from The Lion King. Simba and Nala went out on an adventure. Now, how about some more animals? And this is called Mowgli's Great Story from Disney's The Jungle Book. Now, this is a different part of the world. As the moon rose in the sky, Akela finished his nightly story. Mowgli and his wolf brothers burst into applause. Akela was the pack's best storyteller. He wove tales of humor and suspense that kept Mowgli and the cubs hanging on his every word. "Please, Akela," Mowgli begged, "won't you tell us one more?" Akela smiled kindly at the pack.
"Not tonight," he replied. "It's past your bedtimes."
Sighing, Mowgli and the rest of the cubs scampered off to bed, chattering about the story Akela had told. The next day, Bagheera brought exciting news to the wolf pack. "In 3 sunsets, there will be a jungle story contest," he announced. "What's that?" asked Mowgli. He was excited. "It's a chance for the jungle animals to gather and share their best stories," Bagheera explained. "You have to enter, Akela," said Mowgli's older wolf brother, Pashu. Akela shook his head and smiled.
"Not this time, young ones," he said. "It's about time you all learned how to tell stories of your own."
Soon word of the contest spread throughout the jungle. Everywhere Mowgli looked, he saw animals practicing their tales. Mowgli wanted to share a great story. He wanted it to be funny, scary, mysterious, and full of adventure and bravery. But the more Mowgli thought about it, the sadder he became. He couldn't seem to come up with a story to tell. Bagheera could see that Mowgli was struggling. "Let's go for a walk," he said. "Perhaps you will find your story in the jungle." "How am I going to find my story out here?" Mowgli asked, confused.
"Many of the best stories come from your own life," Bagheera explained. "Look around you for ideas."
As the friends walked through the jungle, Mowgli paid close attention to everything they passed. He heard a woodpecker tap-tap-tapping on a tree. He could tell a story about a bird with a big beak. But then what? He saw a turtle paddling through a small river and wondered if he could tell a tale about a brave turtle. But what would happen next? "Bagheera, I still can't think of anything," Mowgli said.
"Like a tree waiting to blossom, you must have patience," said Bagheera calmly. Mowgli groaned and kicked his foot in the dirt. He wondered if he would ever come up with an idea.
On the day of the contest, everyone was excited about their stories. "I'm going to get really quiet at the scary parts and use my spooky voice so everyone gets the shivers," the wolf cub Gray said.
"Just wait until you hear my ending," Pashu said excitedly.
Mowgli sat quietly. He still hadn't come up with a story. As the sun began to sink in the sky, the jungle animals gathered together to share their tales. Bagheera began the contest with a fable about patience. Mowgli could tell the story was directed at him, but hearing it didn't make him feel any better about not having his own story to share. When Bagheera finished his tale, he invited the smallest wolf onto the stage. Gray did an excellent job of telling his story. His spooky voice worked well, and everyone jumped at the right parts. Next, a monkey shared a silly story about a banana and a prickly pear. The animals laughed until their bellies ached. Pashu shared his story next. As he had predicted, everyone was completely surprised by the ending. As the animals continued sharing their tales, Mowgli grew more and more nervous. What story was he going to tell? Suddenly, Mowgli heard a strange noise coming from deep in the jungle. Maybe that will lead me to my story, he thought. Looking around to make sure no one was watching, he quietly slipped away to investigate the sound. Back at the storytelling contest, the long green snake dropped down from his hiding place high in a tree. It was Kaa the python.
"I, too, have a story to share," Kaa hissed.
"Now, wait a minute," Bagheera said, moving toward the snake. But before Bagheera could take another step, Kaa's eyes grew wide, hypnotizing the panther. One by one, everyone fell silent as they stared at the python. Meanwhile, as Mowgli headed farther into the jungle, he heard the sound again. It was coming from beneath a rock. What could be under there, Mowgli wondered, imagining a surprise ending to his story. But when he lifted the rock, he found a bug. The sound had been nothing but a trapped, clicking beetle. Another boring story, Mowgli thought. With a heavy sigh, he scooted the bug along with his finger and set the rock back down. As he headed back toward the contest, Mowgli tried to think of a way to change the story. Maybe instead of a beetle, it's a fierce tiger, he thought. He tried to work the tale out in his mind, but he just couldn't quite get it right. Suddenly, Mowgli realized that the jungle had grown oddly quiet. Pushing his way through a bush, he saw that everyone at the contest was sitting completely still. Mowgli looked toward the stage. Kaa was hanging down from a tree. He had all the jungle animals hypnotized. Mowgli knew he had to act fast. He quietly snuck up the tree and twisted a vine around Ka's coils. Then he jumped down, rustling the leaves as he landed. "Who is that?" Kaa yelled, whipping his head around. As he tried to move, the vine tugged him in the opposite direction and snapped him back. His head smacked right into the tree.
"My sinuses," as he yelped. Mowgli ran around, clapping his hands together loudly to wake the other animals.
"What's going on?" Bagheera asked Mowgli sleepily.
"Kaa," said Mowgli, pointing to the tree.
"Kaa!" Bagheera's voice boomed.
"Bagheera," Kaa hissed, "I was just leaving." Kaa tried to slither away, but he was still tangled in the vine. With one last big tug, his coils snapped free, and he got twisted up like a pretzel. As Kaa slowly squirmed back into the jungle brush, Mowgli chuckled to himself. At last, he'd found his story. Mowgli stepped onto the stage and took a deep breath. He said, "Once there was a man cub." Mowgli's story was everything he had wanted it to be: funny, scary, mysterious, and full of adventure and bravery. And that was just what he needed to win the contest. And that's Mowgli's story from The Jungle Book. So those were two good ones tonight, The Lion King and The Jungle Book. And you'll come back tomorrow. We'll have some more for you. And when we come back after our little break, we're going to go back to the Magic Treehouse. Jack and Annie are going to have another adventure, this time not from Morgan. No, this one is from Merlin himself. Welcome back to Reading with Rick tonight. And before we start our Magic Treehouse Merlin Mission story tonight, this one's called Season of the Sandstorms. I want to send out my own good wishes and a speedy recovery to one of my good buddies tonight listening. He had a pretty scary accident. Jack, if you're listening, I'm thinking of you, and boy, I'm glad you're okay. We'll see you when you're feeling better, but you hang in there, okay, Jack? Thinking of you. Okay, here we go. One summer day, a mysterious treehouse appeared in the woods. A brother and sister named Jack and Annie soon learned that the treehouse was magic. It could take them to any time and any place in history. You know, I just thought of something. The stars of this book are always called Jack and Annie, and since this one's, I mentioned about my buddy Jack having an accident tonight, how about we make it Jack and Maddie? Maddie's his sister. So instead of Jack and Annie, it's Jack and Maddie tonight. Just for tonight, because this is a special one for them. After Jack and Maddie traveled on many adventures for Morgan, Merlin the Magician began sending them on Merlin missions in the treehouse. With help from two young sorcerers named Teddy and Kathleen, Jack and Maddie visited four mythical places and found valuable objects to help save Camelot. On their next four Merlin missions, Jack and Maddie were told they must travel to real times and real places in history and prove to Merlin that they could use magic wisely. They've just returned from a successful mission in the city of Venice over 250 years ago. Now, they're waiting to hear from Merlin again. Chapter 1 is titled The Golden Age. Jack put his math homework aside. He opened the drawer beside his bed and pulled out a small handmade book. For the 100th time, he stared at the title on the cover. 10 Magic Rhymes for Maddie and Jack from Teddy and Kathleen. For weeks, Jack had kept the book hidden in his drawer, wondering when he and Maddie would be able to use its magic again. The book's 10 rhymes were to be used on 4 missions, and each rhyme could be used only once. Jack and Maddie had already used 2 rhymes on a mission in Venice, Italy. "Jack!" Maddie rushed into Jack's room. Her eyes were shining. "Bring the book. Let's go." "Where?" said Jack. "You know where. Come on," Maddie called as she ran back downstairs. Jack quickly put Teddy and Kathleen's book into his backpack. He pulled on his jacket and took off down the stairs. Maddie was waiting on the front porch. "Hurry," she cried. "Wait, how do you know it's there?" Jack said. "Because I saw it," Maddie shouted. She hurried down the porch steps and crossed the yard. "You saw it? Actually saw it?" yelled Jack as he followed Maddie through the chilly afternoon air. "Yes, yes," Maddie yelled. "When?" shouted Jack. "Just now," said Maddie. "I was walking home from the library and I had this feeling, so I went and looked. It's waiting for us." Jack and Maddie raced into the Frog Creek woods. They ran between the budding trees, over the fresh green moss of early spring, until they came to the tallest oak. "See?" said Maddie. "Yes," breathed Jack. He stared up at the magic treehouse. Its rope ladder dangled above the mossy ground. Maddie started climbing up. Jack followed. When they got inside, Jack pulled off his backpack. "Look, a book and a letter," Maddie said. She picked up a folded letter from the floor, and Jack picked up a book with a gold cover. "Baghdad," Jack said. He showed the book to Maddie. Its title was The Golden Age of Baghdad. "A golden age," said Maddie. "That sounds cool. Let's go." "Wait, we should read our letter first," said Jack. "Right," said Maddie. She unfolded the paper. "Merlin's handwriting," she said, and she read aloud. "Dear Jack and Maddie of Frog Creek, your mission is to journey to Baghdad of long ago and help the Caliph spread wisdom to the world. To succeed, you must be humble and use your magic wisely. Follow these..." "Wait, what's a Caliph?" said Jack. "And what's Merlin mean, spread wisdom to the world? That's a big responsibility." "I don't know," said Maddie. "Let me finish." And she kept reading. "Follow these instructions. Ride a ship of the desert on a cold, starry night. Ride through the dust and hot morning light. Find a horse on a dome, the one who sees all, in the heart of the city, behind the third wall. Beneath birds who sing in the room of the tree, greet a friend you once knew and a new friend to be. Remember that life is full of surprises. Return to the treehouse before the moon rises." "This sounds pretty easy," said Maddie. "No, it doesn't," said Jack. "All these instructions are so mysterious. We don't know what any of them mean." "We'll find out when we get there," said Maddie. "But first, we have to get there. Make the wish." "Okay," said Jack, and he pointed to the cover of the book. "I wish we could go to the golden age of Baghdad," he said. And the wind started to blow, the treehouse started to spin, and it spun faster and faster, and then everything was still, absolutely still. Jack felt hot. He opened his eyes. Burning sunlight was flooding into the treehouse. He and Maddie were wearing long robes tied with cords. They wore white headcloths and pointy slip-on shoes. Jack's backpack had turned into a leather shoulder bag. "We look like characters in that book Aunt Mary gave us," said Annie. Maddie, "Tales from the Arabian Nights." "Yeah, like Aladdin and Ali Baba," said Jack. Shading their eyes from the bright sunlight, Jack and Maddie squinted out the window. They had landed in the spiky crown of a palm tree. It was the tallest tree
in a clump of palm trees. Thorny shrubs and sparse green grass grew under the trees. A small spring bubbled up from the ground. Surrounding the clump of trees were miles and miles of scorching sand. "This doesn't look like a golden age to me," said Maddie. "Yeah, and where's Baghdad?" asked Jack. He picked up their research book and opened it to the first page. He read aloud, "From 762 A.D. to 1258 A.D., the Arab world had a golden age. During that time, a ruler known as a caliph governed an empire that stretched for thousands of miles. The capital of the Arab empire was the city of Baghdad, an important center for learning and trade." Jack looked up. "So the caliph is a ruler," he said, "and he probably lived in Baghdad." "Yeah, but how do we get there?" asked Maddie. "Patience," said Jack. "Remember, on our last mission, we learned that we had to do things in order, one thing at a time." He read the first part of Merlin's instructions. "Ride a ship of the desert on a cold, starry night. Ride through the dust and hot morning light." "I wonder what a ship of the desert is," said Jack, looking up. "Well, whatever it is, I'm sure we'll find it eventually," Maddie said slowly, as if she were trying to sound patient. "We could just sit here and keep an eye out for a big boat, or..." "Or what?" said Jack. "Maybe we could use one of Teddy and Kathleen's magic rhymes." "Not yet," said Jack. "Merlin said to use our magic wisely. We just got here. We used two rhymes on our last mission. And we only have 8 left to divide between 3. "Okay, okay," Maddie broke in. "We can only use a rhyme when there's absolutely nothing else to do, right?" "Right," said Jack. "So," said Maddie, "what do you think we should do?" "We could start walking," said Jack. "Walk where?" said Maddie. "Which way is Baghdad?" Jack looked out the window. Beyond the palm trees, there was nothing but sand and sky. In the distance were lonely dunes. The desert was eerily silent. "We could, Jack couldn't think of anything else they could do. "We could look in the rhyme book," he said. Jack pulled the book of magic rhymes out of his pack. He and Annie read down the table of contents together. "Make a stone come alive," read Maddie. "We did that on our last mission. We can't do that again." "It wouldn't help anyway," said Jack. He looked at other rhymes. "Make metal soft," he said. "Well, we've already done that, too." "Turn into ducks," read Maddie. She looked at Jack. "No," he said. "Mend what cannot be mended," read Aunt Maddie. "Nothing needs mending," said Jack. "How about this one?" said Maddie. "Make helpers appear out of nowhere." "Well," said Jack, "maybe." "Come on, it's perfect," said Maddie. "That's where we are, nowhere, and we could sure use some helpers." "Okay," said Jack, "I'll read the line Teddy wrote. You read Kathleen's line in her Selkie language." "Okay," said Maddie. She turned to the page with the rhyme. She held the book out to Jack. Jack read in a loud, clear voice, "From far beyond, send helpers here." Then Annie read, "Hi bye, hi kier." The second that Maddie finished the rhyme, wind gusted in from the desert, blowing a cloud of sand through the window. The wind shook the palm trees. Sand blew into Maddie's eyes. "Ow," she said. "Get back," cried Jack. Jack and Maddie jumped away from the window. They pressed themselves against the wall and covered their faces. Gritty sand kept blowing into the treehouse. "It's a sandstorm," said Jack. The hot sand piled into drifts all over the floor. Then the wind died down as quickly as it had started, and the palm trees stopped shaking. Jack and Maddie looked out the window. The air was thick with grainy dust, making it hard to see, but the sand was still. "I think it's over," said Maddie. "I hope so," said Jack. "Why did our magic rhyme cause a sandstorm instead of sending us helpers?" "I don't know," said Maddie. "Maybe we said it wrong." Jack brushed the sand off their research book and looked up sandstorms in the index. He found the right page and read, "The season of the sandstorms begins in the desert in mid-February and continues all spring. Winds can blow as fast as 40 miles per hour. Sandstorms can easily cause travelers to lose their way in the desert." "I don't understand," said Jack. "We don't need to lose our way. We need to find our way." Just then,
the sound of bells came from outside. Jack and Maddie looked out the window. Through the haze, they saw four riders perched high on the humps of camels. The riders wore brightly colored robes. Behind them, a dozen more camels were tied head to tail and loaded down with saddlebags. As the camels swung from side to side, bells tinkled from around their necks. Maddie grinned. "Helpers," she said. Maddie stuck her head out the treehouse window. "Hey," she called. "Shh," said Jack, pulling her back in. "Don't let them see us up here. It's too hard to explain the treehouse. Let's go down."
"Good point," said Maddie. She handed Merlin's letter to Jack and started down the rope ladder. Jack grabbed his shoulder bag. He put the letter inside, then added the research book and the rhyme book. He slung the leather bag across his chest and climbed down. When he stepped onto the ground, Jack twisted the rope ladder behind the tree trunk so it wouldn't be noticed. "Okay," he said to Maddie. "Hey," Maddie called again, waving. She and Jack stepped out into the open. The camel riders headed toward the palm trees. The man in the lead made his camel kneel. As he climbed off, Jack and Maddie ran over to him. The man wore a long white robe. He had a black beard and stern, dark eyes. "Who are you?" he asked, unsmiling. "From where do you come?"
"I'm Maddie, and this is my brother Jack," said Maddie. "Our home is far away in Frog Creek, Pennsylvania."
"I've not heard of such a place," the man said. "How do you come to be here in the desert alone?"
Jack didn't know what to say. "We are riding with our family," Maddie said. "We stopped to rest here. My brother and I took a nap behind these trees. When we woke up, everyone was gone. They left us by mistake. See, we have a really big family. There are many brothers and sisters."
"Maddie," said Jack. She was saying too much, he thought. The man looked concerned. "Why have they not come back for you?" he said, gazing out at the desert. "I hope they've not been attacked by bandits."
"Are there bandits around here?" asked Maddie.
"There are many bandits prowling the desert," said the man. Jack looked anxiously around at the vast sandy plain.
"That is why one must always travel with others," said the man. "But I hope your family is safe and will return for you soon."
"Excuse me," Maddie said politely, "but who are you and how did you happen to come here?"
"I'm a merchant," the man said. "My caravan was traveling from the west when we were surprised by a sudden sandstorm. It seemed to come from nowhere. But luckily it brought us to this oasis. We will rest and water our animals until the sun goes down. In the cool of the night, we will travel on to Baghdad." The caravan leader walked over to his men and spoke to them. They dismounted and started taking saddlebags off the camels. Maddie turned to Jack. "See, our rhyme worked," she whispered. "The sandstorm was magic. It brought them here on their way to Baghdad."
"But how can we get them to help us?" said Jack.
"Well, Merlin said we should be humble, so let's offer to help them," said Maddie. She walked over to the caravan leader. He was filling a canvas bucket with water from a small spring.
"Excuse me," said Maddie, "and we wondered if we could help you."
The man gave her a quick smile.
"Thank you. Yes," he said. "If you could gather dates, it would be most appreciated. My men are very hungry." He handed Maddie two large baskets.
"No problem," said Maddie. "We'll gather dates."
Maddie carried the baskets to Jack.
"Do you know what a date is?" she whispered. "We're supposed to gather some."
"I'll look it up," said Jack. With his back to the camel riders, he pulled their research book out of his bag and looked up dates. He read, "Dates are known as the fruit of the desert. They hang in bunches from date palms. People gather dates by shaking the trunk of the tree. Not only are dates an important food, but the wood and leaves of the date palm are used to make..."
"Okay, got it," interrupted Maddie, putting the baskets down. "Let's start shaking the trees."
Jack put the book away and looked around. For the first time, he noticed bunches of brown fruit hanging from the trees. He grabbed hold of the nearest tree trunk. Maddie grabbed the trunk from the other side. Together they shook the tree until dates began falling to the ground. In the desert heat, Jack and Maddie went from tree to tree, shaking each one and gathering the dates that fell to the ground. By the time they'd filled their baskets, the trees were casting long shadows over the oasis. Tired and sweaty, Jack and Maddie carried their heavy baskets back to the caravan leader. He was boiling water over a fire of twigs.
"Ah, very good," he said. "Thank you, Jack and Maddie."
"You're welcome," said Maddie. "What else can we do for you?"
"You should rest from the heat now," said the man. "Would you like to sit and have tea with us?"
"Sure," said Maddie. "By the way, what's your name?"
"My name is very long," the man said with a smile. "You may call me Mamoon." While their camels grazed, Mamoon and his men sat on a woolen rug spread over the grass. They shared dates and tea with Jack and Maddie. The dark, plump fruit was sweet and chewy. The tea was strong, but good. In the fiery red glow of the setting sun, Jack watched the grazing camels. He thought the humped animals looked really funny. They had knobby knees and big clumsy feet and little ears that twitched. Some camels smacked their droopy lips as they drank water. Others gobbled down whole branches of thorn bushes without chewing.
"Don't the thorns hurt the camel's throats?" Jack asked Mamoon.
"No," said the caravan leader. "Their mouths are very tough. They can eat anything. Sticks, bones, even our tents and saddlebags if we let them," said a young camel rider. And Maddie and Jack laughed.
"What's in your saddlebags?" Maddie asked.
"Our bags are filled with goods from Greece, Turkey, and Syria," said Mamoon. "We have many things, jewels, beads, and precious spices, such as cinnamon, pepper, and vanilla. We're taking everything to Baghdad to sell."
"We have to get to Baghdad, too," said Maddie. "We have to meet with the caliph."
The camel riders chuckled as if they thought Maddie was making a joke. Only Mamoon did not laugh.
"Your family is to meet with the caliph?" he said.
"No," said Maddie, "just Jack and me. We have to help him spread wisdom to the world."
"Maddie," warned Jack. The camel riders laughed loudly.
"What's so funny?" Maddie asked.
"The caliph does not meet with children," said a young man. "He's the most powerful and important person in the world."
"Oh," said Maddie, frowning.
The news worried Jack, too.
Mamoon looked at Maddie and Jack with a curious expression.
"Night will soon be upon us. Since your family has not yet returned, would you like to travel with us to Baghdad?"
"You have journeyed by camel this far. I trust you can ride camels the rest of the way."
"Sure we can," said Maddie. "We love camels."
"We do," thought Jack.
"Good. We love our ships of the desert, too," said Mamoon. "We will set sail on them soon."
"So that's what ships of the deserts are," Maddie whispered to Jack.
"Camels," thought Jack.
"Oh, brother."
The camel riders all silently watched the sun set over the faraway dunes. As the fiery ball slipped beneath the horizon, the desert was flooded with red light. As soon as the sun disappeared, the air grew much cooler. Mamoon stood up.
"It's time to go," he said.
The camel riders put out their small fire. In the growing darkness, Mamoon helped them saddle up their animals and load them with baggage. Then Mamoon came over to Jack and Maddie.
"You can ride those two sisters," he said, pointing to two camels kneeling in the sand.
"Climb on, then come to the front of the line to ride with me."
Jack and Maddie walked over to the two camel sisters. Each had reins hanging from her neck. Saddles made from colorful cushions were piled high on their humps. Maddie patted the wiry, tan-colored fur of one of the camels. The camel looked at Maddie with big eyes and fluttered her thick eyelashes.
"Hey, cutie," said Maddie.
The other camel nuzzled Maddie's neck.
"Hey, beauty," Maddie said to the other. "You want some attention, too?"
"Cutie and beauty," said Jack. He didn't find either camel particularly cute or beautiful. Maddie climbed onto Cutie's saddle cushion and picked up the reins.
"Let's ride," she said.
Cutie rose awkwardly up from a kneeling position to a full stand.
"Oh, wow," said Maddie, towering over Jack. "She's really tall."
Jack started to climb onto Beauty, but the camel caught an end of his headcloth and began chewing it.
"Stop that," said Jack, pulling the cloth away from her.
Beauty opened her mouth wide and flashed rows of sharp teeth, and Jack drew back.
"Don't be afraid," said Maddie.
"Easy for you to say," said Jack. "Yours likes you."
"Don't worry, Beauty likes you too," said Maddie.
"I can tell." Maddie's camel began ambling toward the other camels, waiting to head off into the desert.
"Come on, Jack, it's really fun once you're moving," she called.
"Fun," muttered Jack. "Yeah, right."
He held on to the ends of his headcloth and put his leg over Beauty's hump. The camel eyed him suspiciously. She swished her tail, slapping his back. "Hey," said Jack. Jack tried to get comfortable on the saddle cushion, but Beauty spat at him and made a weird screeching sound. "Quiet," said Jack. He hooked his shoulder bag onto a saddle horn. When he was finally settled, Beauty turned her head and started chewing on his leather bag. "No, don't," yelled Jack. He tried pulling the bag away, but Beauty played tug of war. "Come on, let go," Jack said. "Give it back, stupid."
"Do you really think she is stupid?"
Jack jumped. Mamoon had ridden up behind him and was watching as he tried to get his bag back from Beauty. Jack was embarrassed. She won't let go of my stuff," he said. Mamoon grabbed the strap of Jack's bag. He clucked his tongue, and the camel let go. She groaned as Mamoon hooked the leather bag back onto the saddle horn. "For thousands of years, camels like this one have carried people across the desert," said Mamoon. "She is truly a miracle of nature." "Some miracle," thought Jack. "She can drink 2 barrels of water in 10 minutes, said Mamoon, "and then go for a week without drinking again. She can live many days without food, too."
"Really?" said Jack.
"She is well suited to travel in the desert," said Mamoon. "Her thick eyebrows protect her eyes from the glare of the sun. Her long eyelashes and the fur around her ears keep out the wind-blown sand."
"Cool," said Jack softly.
"Her feet are so tough, they do not feel the heat of the desert," said Mamoon, "and they are so big that they keep her from sinking down into the loose sand."
"Hmm," said Jack.
"She can carry 500 pounds of baggage on her back," said Mamoon, "and travel 100 miles in a single day."
"That's a lot," murmured Jack.
Mamoon tugged on the camel's reins and clucked his tongue. Beauty breathed heavily as she rose up on her long, powerful legs to her full height. Mamoon looked at Jack. "We must respect her and honor her," he said. "In many ways, she is superior to us, no?" Jack nodded. He thought of the words of Merlin's letter. "To succeed in your mission, you must be humble." He patted the camel. "Good girl, Beauty." Mamoon clucked his tongue again to coax the camel forward. Perched high on his saddle, Jack rocked from side to side. He did not feel at all safe, but he stayed calm. Beauty ambled over to Cutie. The two sisters stood together and snorted. The desert sky was bright with stars. Mamoon called to his men, and the caravan started moving forward. The camels walked with a swaying motion. They moved 2 big feet on one side, then 2 big feet on the other. Jack gripped the horn of his saddle as his ship of the desert rocked from left to right.
"Isn't this fun?" said Maddie, rocking alongside him.
"Sort of," said Jack, shivering. Actually, he wasn't having any fun at all. He felt seasick and was freezing in the night air. Also, he was worried about their mission. Would the caliph meet with them? If he did, how could they help him spread wisdom to the world? And if Baghdad was very far away, how would they ever find their way back to the treehouse?
Mamoon slowed his camel until he was riding between Jack and Maddie. "When I was a boy, I spent many cold nights in the desert riding with my father on journeys to the west. At first, I too thought camels were foolish. I always longed for more blankets and for a smoother ride. I wished to be back in Baghdad in my own warm bed." Jack smiled. He liked the caravan leader. "But over time, I have come to love the cold desert night," said Mamoon. "Now, when I am sleeping in my warm bed in Baghdad, I long to be here instead. I wish to be reading the wind and the stars."
"How do you read the stars?" asked Maddie.
"They have their own language," said Mamoon. "At this moment, we are heading east toward the goat star," and he pointed at the sky. Jack couldn't tell which star was the goat star, but he was filled with wonder. Thousands of tiny lights twinkled in the black dome of night. There were more stars than Jack had ever imagined. Some looked close enough to touch. Mamoon started singing a song. The other camel riders joined in. Jack couldn't understand the words, but the tune was soothing. The camels seemed to sway to the music. Jack stopped worrying about how they'd get back to the treehouse, and he found he was actually enjoying the fresh desert air. He started to relax.
"Jack," Maddie said softly, "guess what? We just solved the first mystery in Merlin's letter. ride a ship of the desert on a cold, starry night.
Yeah, said Jack happily, and it's really fun.
Suddenly, a fierce shout came from the distance. Jack sat up straighter. His heart thumped.
Bandits! One of the camel drivers shouted.
Jack looked around wildly. Dark figures on horses were galloping across the sand toward them. They were yelling and shouting.
Oh, no, cried Jack. What should we do?
We'll fight them off, said Mamoon. You and Maddie, take this box and ride to the dunes.
Mamoon pulled a flat wooden box out of one of his saddlebags. He thrust the box into Jack's hands.
Hurry, ride as fast as you can. Protect it with your lives.
Jack frantically tried to stuff the box into his shoulder bag, but Mamoon slapped the back of Jack's camel, and she bolted forward.
The reins slipped from Jack's hands. He grabbed the saddle horn with one hand and clutched the wooden box to his chest with the other. He held on for his life as Beauty galloped across the dark desert.
Annie's camel ran beside Jack's. Like two racehorses, Beauty and Cutie thundered across the sand toward the distant dunes.
Rocking crazily from side to side, Jack clung to the box.
Slow down, he yelled, please.
It was no use. Beauty ran like the wind. She and her sister practically flew over the desert under the starry sky. Jack wanted the camels to stop, but at the same time, he wanted to get far away from the bandits. Finally, the camels began to slow their pace. Jack looked back. He couldn't see the caravan at all, and no one seemed to be following them. When the two camels reached the dunes, they began plodding around the steep hills. Once they were nestled safely between tall sand drifts, they stopped to rest. Beauty grunted and Cutie snorted.
Thanks, girl, said Maddie, panting.
I hope Mamoon and the others are safe from the bandits, said Jack.
Me too, said Maddie. What's in the box he gave us?
Jack held up the flat wooden box.
I don't know, he said, but Mamoon said we should protect it with our lives.
Maybe it's a precious spice, said Aunt Maddie.
I hope it's more than that, said Jack. I'd hate to risk my life for cinnamon or pepper.
Should we look, said Maddie?
I don't know, said Jack. Mamoon might not want us to.
But don't you think we could protect it better if we knew what it was, said Maddie?
Maybe, said Jack. He could see Maddie's point.
Okay.
Jack tried to open the lid of the box, but he couldn't. In the dark, his finger pressed against a keyhole.
Forget it, he said. It's locked.
Shh, listen, said Maddie.
Jack listened. He heard a high-pitched moaning sound. It sounded like music from a violin. Wafting through the dry sand dunes, the haunting music grew louder.
What is that? Said Jack.
Uh-oh, said Maddie. Now I hear something else.
And Jack held his breath. He heard hooves galloping over the desert.
The bandits, he said.
We have to hide the box, said Maddie.
Where? Said Jack.
In the sand, said Maddie.
She clucked her tongue, and Cutie knelt down to the ground. Beauty knelt, too.
Jack and Maddie jumped off their saddle cushions and started digging in the sand.
The sound of hoofbeats grew louder and louder. Jack and Maddie dug frantically. They threw sand behind them like puppies digging in the dirt.
That's deep enough, said Jack.
He placed the box in the hole they dug. Then he and Maddie pushed piles of sand back on top of it.
When they stood up, Maddie gasped,
look!
A dark figure on a camel was silhouetted against the starlit sky. The rider was winding his way through the dunes towards them.
Jack's heart nearly pounded out of his chest.
Should we use a magic rhyme? Maddie asked.
We don't have time, said Jack.
The rider drew closer until he stopped in front of Jack and Maddie.
You are safe, no? He said.
Mamoon, said Maddie.
Relief flooded through Jack. He laughed.
Yes, we're safe, he said, and you're safe too.
My men fought well, said Mamoon. The thieves fled with only a few bags of pepper and painted beads.
And we kept your box safe too, said Maddie proudly.
She knelt and dug in the sand until she uncovered the wooden box. She handed it to Mamoon.
Ah, very good, the caravan leader said.
What's in the box? Asked Maddie.
A priceless treasure, said Mamoon. I've brought it all the way from Greece, and I'm taking it to Baghdad. Thank you both for guarding it with your lives. You are very special.
Sure, no problem, said Jack.
He still wondered what was in the box. Gold? Silver? Precious jewels?
But Mamoon did not say. He put the box back into his camel saddlebag, "Let us be on our way now," he said. Jack climbed on top of his kneeling camel. He clucked his tongue, and he was surprised and pleased when Beauty rose up on her tall legs. "We will catch up with the others in Baghdad," said Mamoun. "If all goes well, we'll arrive in the city in the afternoon. We must head east toward the morning sun." Mamoun rode out of the dunes. Jack and Maddie followed him. As their camels rocked through the chilly dawn, daylight shimmered over the sand. "Mamoun, last night we heard strange sounds in the dunes," said Maddie, "like music playing." "Ah, yes," said Mamoun, "the whistling sands."
"What are the whistling sands?" asked Jack.
"Some say it is magic," said Mamoun, "but I believe that all things in nature have their reasons. That is why I like the study of science. Science says we must observe our world. We must make experiments and try to find out why things happen. We have learned the whistling is made by sands settling in the drifts."
"Oh," said Maddie, "I'd hoped it was magic."
"Learning the reasons for things is magic," said Mamoun. "True knowledge brings light to the world, and that is a magical thing, no?"
"Yes," said Jack.
Maddie nodded thoughtfully. "I guess when you put it that way," she said. Swaying from side to side on their camels, the three riders traveled toward the dawn. As the sun rose higher in the sky, the desert grew blazing hot. A dry wind whipped through the air, making snaky patterns in the sand. Mamoun halted his camel. He looked around and frowned.
"What's wrong?" said Jack. "Are there signs of bandits?"
Mamoun shook his head. "No, it is the desert itself that worries me now," he said. "It is restless." He clucked his tongue, and his camel began walking again. As they rode over the restless desert, the wind picked up loose sand and tossed it into the air. Jack and Maddie lowered their heads to keep the sand from blowing into their eyes. Their head claws flapped in the wind. More and more sand started blowing. The desert seemed alive as the sand shifted and swirled. Mamoun stopped again and looked about. The snaky patterns in the sand were blowing into round, curly patterns. Jack heard a weird moaning sound.
"Is that the whistling sands again?" he asked hopefully.
"No," said Mamoun. "That is the cry of a terrible sandstorm, and it will soon be upon us." In the distance, a haze of sand was spreading over the desert. As the wind picked up, the sky turned red, and the haze thickened into a brown cloud. The cloud began gliding toward Jack and Maddie and Mamoun like a moving wall.
"Get down! Lie on your bellies!" ordered Mamoun. "Quickly! Cover your faces with your headcloths!"
Jack clucked his tongue. Beauty knelt to the ground. Jack, Maddie, and Mamoun jumped off their camels and lay down on the sand beside them. Jack tried desperately to cover his face with his headcloth, but the raging wind kept whipping the cloth from his hands. The sky turned from red to black. The moaning sound turned into a loud rumbling. Jack looked up and saw the wind rip the saddlebag off Mamoun's kneeling camel. The bag hit the ground and fell open. The box bounced out and tumbled away in the driving wind.
"The treasure!" cried Jack,
but his voice was drowned out by the wind. He jumped up and bolted after the box. Jack raced across the desert as the sand battered his body. The wind tried to push him down, but Jack ran with all his might until finally he caught up with the box and threw himself down on top of it. He grabbed the ends of his headscarf and covered his face. The sandstorm blasted over Jack, sounding like the hoofbeats of 100 galloping camels. Jack's eyes burned. He felt as if he were suffocating. Slowly the thundering softened to a low rumbling. The rumbling faded to a moaning. The wind died down. The hot desert grew still and silent. Coughing, Jack rolled over and sat up. He had sand in his mouth, sand in his ears, and sand in his nose. He pulled off his glasses and rubbed his stinging eyes, but rubbing only made them worse. Blinking, Jack clutched the box and looked around for the others. The air was thick with dust. He'd completely lost his sense of direction.
"Jack! Jack!" he heard Maddie shouting.
Jack clutched the small wooden box and stood up. His legs were so wobbly, he fell over.
"Maddie!" he croaked.
"Jack!" she called through the dust. "Where are you?"
"Here!" he said.
Where? Here. Oh, there you are, said Maddie, stumbling out of the haze. Are you okay?
I'm okay, croaked Jack. Are you?
Yes, I ran after you, said Maddie. Her voice was hoarse, too.
I had to save the box, said Jack. Where's Mamoon?
I don't know, said Maddie. I don't think he saw us chase after the box.
Mamoon, they shouted together. Mamoon!
But there was no answer.
Peering through the sandy haze, Jack heard thumping sounds. He and Annie turned around. Their two camels were trotting toward them.
Cutie, cried Maddie. Beauty!
Jack and Maddie stumbled to their camels and grabbed their reins.
Thank you for finding us, said Maddie.
Yeah, thanks, said Jack, patting Beauty.
Mamoon, Maddie called. Mamoon!
He must have gone in the wrong direction to look for us, said Jack.
If we don't find him, how will we get to Baghdad, and what will we do with his treasure, asked Maddie.
I don't know, said Jack. He held up the wooden box.
Look, the top's broken, said Maddie. She pointed to a long crack running down the lid of the box.
I hope the treasure wasn't hurt, said Jack.
Maybe we should check and see, said Maddie.
Jack took a deep breath. He still thought Mamoon might not want them to look inside the box, but his curiosity got the best of him.
Okay, he said, I guess it wouldn't hurt to make sure it's all right.
Jack pried apart the two pieces of wood and lifted them off.
Inside the box was a book.
A book? Said Jack, surprised. He'd expected gold or jewels. He carefully lifted the book out of the box. It had a plain leather cover with no title on it.
It doesn't look like a precious treasure, said Maddie.
Maybe the writing inside is the treasure, said Jack.
Jack gently opened the book. Inside were pages of thick yellow paper. The pages were bound with stitching and covered with writing on both sides. The first page said, "The writings of Aristotle."
Who is Aristotle? Said Maddie, sounding out the name.
I don't know, said Jack. I'll look him up in our research book.
He unhooked his bag from the saddle horn. Sand covered the books inside. He pulled out their research book and brushed it off. Then he looked up Aristotle in the index.
Good, he's here, said Jack. He turned to the right page and read.
Aristotle lived in ancient Greece over 2,300 years ago. He is known as one of the greatest philosophers of all time. The word philosopher means lover of wisdom. Aristotle's works were introduced to the Western world by the Arabs in the Middle Ages.
So Aristotle was a great lover of wisdom, said Maddie.
I guess so, said Jack, but I wonder why this book is such a treasure.
Wait a minute, said Maddie. Doesn't Merlin's note tell us that we have to help the Caliph of Baghdad spread wisdom to the world?
Jack caught his breath.
Yeah, he said, and if this is a book of Aristotle's writings, it must be full of wisdom. We have to get this book to the Caliph. That's our mission for Merlin.
We better get going, said Maddie.
Jack and Maddie pulled on the reins of their camels and clucked their tongues. Beauty and Cutie knelt in the sand, and Jack and Maddie climbed on. Leaving the broken box behind, Jack carefully packed the ancient book of Aristotle's wisdom and the research book into his bag. Then he hung the bag from his saddle horn.
Which way? Said Maddie.
Toward the rising sun in the east, said Jack. That's what Mamoon said.
It's that way, then, said Maddie, and she pointed toward a bright blur in the hazy sky.
Jack and Maddie's camels headed into the dusty, glaring sun.
Hey! We're following Merlin's second instruction now, said Maddie. Ride through the dust and hot morning light.
You're right, said Jack.
As Jack and Maddie kept traveling toward the east, the desert sand shimmered and sparkled with heat. The air cleared, but still, they saw no sign of Mamoon.
Jack looked down to shield his eyes from the burning sunlight.
Exhausted, he closed his eyes. As Beauty swayed gently from side to side, Jack's head dropped forward. Suddenly, he heard Maddie shout, Jack, look!
What, Mamoon?
Said Jack, jerking awake.
No, look, said Maddie.
In the distance, Jack saw sunlit towers and domes shining against the clear blue sky.
Oh, man, he whispered, Baghdad!
Let's hurry, said Maddie.
As Beauty and Cutie walked toward Baghdad, the loose sand of the desert changed to sun-baked earth. Then the hard earth changed to scrubby grass. Goats and sheep grazed in the grass, and farms dotted the countryside. It wasn't long before Jack and Annie came to a red clay path. The path led to a crossroads where many travelers were coming from different directions. They were all heading toward the shining city. Jack and Maddie rode alongside boys driving sheep and farmers in donkey carts. They passed women with veils over their faces, carrying pots on their shoulders. Jack kept looking for Mamoon, but he never saw him. Moving with the crowd, Beauty and Cutie clomped across the bridge. Rowboats and barges glided along the yellowish-brown river. On the other side of the river was a huge outdoor market with a maze of tents. The market seemed to be filled with people from many countries. The sharp smell of incense filled the air. Stalls were jammed with burlap sacks, baskets, and carpets. Shoemakers sat cross-legged, stitching shoes. Potters were bent over ovens, baking earth-colored pots. Weavers sat at small looms, spinning silk brocade. "Paper! Pearls!" a merchant shouted. "No thanks," said Maddie. "Pigeons! Parrots!" another shouted at Jack. "No thanks," he said. "I love this place," said Maddie. "What is it?" "I'll look it up," said Jack, and he pulled out their research book and read, "In the 9th century, traders from all over the world brought their goods to Baghdad to sell. Baghdad merchants traded paper, fine cloth, and jewelry for goods from Spain, India, Africa, China, Greece, and other lands. These goods were sold in a huge open-air market called a bazaar." "Oh, so a bazaar is sort of like a mall," said Jack. "It's a lot better than a mall," said Maddie. "Let's get off and look around." "We don't have time to shop," said Jack. "We have to finish our mission." He pulled out Merlin's letter and read, "Find a horse on a dome, the one who sees all, in the heart of the city, beyond the third wall." "It sounds like we pass three walls and then we come to a horse," said Jack. "We'd better keep going." Jack put the book and letter away. Beauty and Cutie ambled through the noisy bazaar. When they left the bazaar, they came to a curved brick wall. Running along the base of the wall was a muddy moat. "Look, that must be the first wall," said Maddie. "Cool," said Jack. Jack and Maddie rode the two camels over an arched bridge that crossed the moat. They passed through a gate with double iron doors. On the other side of the wall was a busy avenue lined with buildings. As their camels wove slowly in and out of the crowd, Jack pulled out their research book. Swaying from side to side, he read to Maddie. During its golden age, Baghdad had good hospitals. The city was also known for its excellent police system and public schools, along with its many libraries and stores and a zoo with 100 lions. "I'd like to visit those lions," said Maddie. "We don't have time now," said Jack. Their camels clopped down the busy avenue until they came to a green field. "Look, there's the second wall," said Maddie. Bordering the field was another wall. It was curved, too, but much taller than the first. It looked like it was at least 100 feet high. There were guards at the gate, but they didn't seem to be checking any of the people passing through. "Act normal," Jack advised to Maddie. "Don't attract their attention." Jack and Maddie joined a stream of people passing through the gate. Beyond the second wall was another grand avenue, and at the end of the wide cobbled road was another green field. "Look, the third wall," said Maddie. The third wall was even taller than the second. Again, people were passing freely through its gate. "This part of the mission is easy," said Maddie. "Yeah," said Jack, "but we still have to find that horse on the dome and then find the caliph and get him to meet with us." Beauty and Cutie ambled through the gate of the third wall, carrying Jack and Maddie into the heart of Baghdad. A palace loomed before them. Its roof was a glittering green dome, and at the top of the dome stood the statue of a horse. "Yay, the horse who sees all," said Maddie. "I'll bet the caliph lives in that palace. Let's follow those people inside." She pointed to a stream of people entering an arched passageway outside the palace. Jack and Maddie rode under the arch and into a beautiful garden. The warm breeze smelled of flowers. They rode down a path bordered by date palms until they came to a courtyard where boys were playing ball. Near the courtyard was a stable with camels in it. "Looks like we'll have to go the rest of the way on foot," said Jack.
"Yeah, I guess Beauty and Cutie can stay there," said Maddie, pointing to the stable.
Jack and Maddie rode into the stable. They clucked, and the camels knelt. As Jack reached for his shoulder bag, a ball rolled into the stable. Maddie picked it up and stepped outside, and Jack followed her.
"Here," shouted a young boy with curly black hair. He was holding out his hands.
Maddie threw the ball to him, and the boy caught it. He grinned at Maddie's good throw.
"Who are you?" he called. "Where are you from?"
Before Jack could say anything, Maddie crossed to the boys. Jack hurried after her.
"I'm Maddie, and this is my brother Jack," said Maddie. "We're from Frog Creek, Pennsylvania."
"Why have you come to Baghdad?" the boy asked.
"We have to see the Caliph," said Annie.
The boy and his friends laughed.
"What's so funny?" said Maddie.
"Our Caliph is the most powerful man in the world," said another boy. "He doesn't have time to visit with children."
"That's what everyone keeps saying," said Maddie, "but we're here on a very important mission. We..."
"Maddie," Jack interrupted, "come on. I left my bag back in the stable." He waved to the boys.
"See you guys later. Let's go, Maddie."
Maddie started to leave with Jack.
"When you discover that the Caliph will not meet with you, come back and play with us," called the curly-haired boy.
Maddie stopped. "Don't worry," she called back. "He'll meet with us. We're special."
"Maddie, come on," said Jack.
"Why are you special?" shouted the boy.
"For one thing, we just saved a precious treasure from bandits and from a sandstorm in the desert," said Maddie. "For another..."
"Maddie," Jack said sternly. He grabbed her arm.
"Come on,"
and he pulled Maddie away. As they headed back into the stable, Jack shook his head.
"Don't say stuff like that," he said.
"Why not?" said Maddie.
"Because it's bragging," said Jack. "It makes other kids feel bad. Even if you are special, you don't have to..."
"Oh, no," cried Maddie. She covered her mouth with her hands.
"What?" said Jack, following her shocked gaze.
Jack's leather bag lay at Beauty's feet. It was open. Beside it was the torn leather cover of Aristotle's book. Wet pages hung in shreds from Beauty's mouth as she happily chewed the precious treasure.
"No!" cried Jack.
Jack ran to Beauty and yanked hunks of paper from her mouth. Maddie dropped to her knees and picked up the torn pieces strewn around the camel's big feet.
"The treasure's ruined," moaned Maddie.
Jack was stunned. "I shouldn't have left my bag here," he said.
"No, it's all my fault. I shouldn't have gone back and bragged to those kids," wailed Maddie.
"I should have acted more humble, like Merlin said," Maddie sounded like she was about to cry.
"It's okay," said Jack,
but he knew it wasn't. The book was destroyed. They'd failed in their mission.
Maybe we can fix it," said Maddie.
Jack shook his head.
"No, we can't," he said. "It's completely destroyed. It can't be fixed."
Maddie looked up.
What did you just say?" she said.
"I said it can't be fixed," said Jack, and a big grin crossed Maddie's face.
"Right, it can't be fixed," she said. "Help me gather up all these pieces."
"Why?" said Jack. "Had Maddie gone nuts?"
"Just do it, quick," said Maddie.
Jack and Maddie rushed around the stable, gathering up all the torn pages they could find.
"Now, pile everything over here on top of the cover and give me the book," said Maddie.
"What book?" said Jack.
"The rhyme book," said Maddie.
Oh, right," said Jack. He reached into his shoulder bag and pulled out Teddy and Kathleen's Book of Magic Rhymes. Jack opened the book and read down the list.
"Here it is.
Mend what cannot be mended," he said.
"That's the one," said Maddie.
Jack flipped through the pages until he came to the rhyme. He held up the book so he and Maddie could both see. Standing in a shaft of sunlight, Jack read in a loud, clear voice, "Heal what is broken beyond repair." Maddie read the second line, "Abi Brial, Fenomare." The paper bits fluttered. They began to swirl off the floor. They swirled up and around as if they were caught in a small tornado. The tornado captured all the torn pieces in its funnel, twisting them together. The paper swirled into a blur of blinding light. Jack shielded his eyes. He heard a loud woof. When he looked up, the bright tornado had vanished. Lying on the floor of the stable in front of Jack and Maddie was the ancient book. Holding his breath, Jack carefully picked up the treasure. He opened the leather cover.
"Oh, man," he whispered.
Aristotle's priceless words of wisdom
were neatly written on the yellow pages. There was no sign of a rip or tear anywhere.
"Thank goodness," breathed Maddie.
"Yeah," said Jack. "So what do we do now?" said Maddie.
"I don't know," said Jack. "What's the next thing Merlin tells us to do?"
He pulled out Merlin's letter and read, "Beneath birds who sing in the room of the tree, greet a friend you once knew and a new friend to be."
"What's that mean?" said Jack.
Suddenly Jack heard someone behind them. He and Maddie turned around. A girl was standing in the doorway of the stable. She wore a long white gown. Her hair and face were hidden by a veil.
"Hi," said Maddie. "Who are you?"
"I'm a servant of the palace," the girl whispered. "Come." She motioned for them to follow her.
"Let's go," Maddie said to Jack.
"Where's she taking us?" asked Jack. "And why is she whispering?"
"I don't know," said Maddie, "but I feel like we should follow her."
"Okay," said Jack, and he put the Book of Wisdom and the Book of Magic Rhymes into his bag. He slung the bag over his shoulder and followed Maddie and the servant girl out of the stable. The three of them walked through the courtyard and through the palace doors. They walked down a wide candlelit hallway over a thick woven carpet. At the end of the hallway was a tall carved door. A boy servant stood by the door. He wore baggy trousers and a long shirt. His face was almost completely hidden by his head cloth. He did not speak or look at them. The servant girl stood close to Jack and Maddie. In her strange, whispery voice, she said, "In front of the chair, bow to the floor. Do not look up and do not speak until you're spoken to."
"But what?" said Jack.
"Go quickly," whispered the girl. The boy servant pulled open the heavy door. The girl servant pushed them into the room.
"Wait," said Jack.
But the boy servant closed the door behind them, leaving Jack and Maddie alone.
"Jack, look, we're here," said Maddie.
"The room of the tree." Jack turned around. A giant tree stood in the center of the room. It had silver leaves that fluttered as if blown by the wind. Mechanical golden birds sang tweet tweet from the silver branches. Beneath the strange tree was an empty black chair. Jewels sparkled in its shiny wood.
"We're in the right place," said Maddie.
She quoted from Merlin's letter. "Beneath birds who sing in the room of the tree, greet a friend you once knew and a new friend to be."
"Another mystery solved," Maddie said.
"Not really," said Jack. "Where are the two friends?"
"I don't know, but we better bow in front of the chair like that servant girl told us to," said Maddie.
Jack and Maddie knelt in front of the shiny black chair. They bowed their heads to the floor. Jack gripped his bag with the treasure inside.
"Remember what else she said," Maddie reminded Jack. "Don't look up and don't speak until we're spoken to."
"But there's no one here," said Jack. He felt foolish bowing in front of a chair and listening to the chirping of mechanical birds. "Why are we doing this?" he wondered. The door opened with a slow creaking sound. Jack squeezed his eyes shut. He heard footsteps moving past them.
"How did you get into the throne room?" a deep, gruff voice asked.
"A servant brought us here," said Maddie.
"And why have you come?" asked the voice.
"We have a priceless treasure to give to the Caliph of Baghdad," said Jack, keeping his head down. "It's a Book of Wisdom."
Jack fumbled in his bag and pulled out the book. He kept his eyes tightly shut as he held the book up toward the voice. There was a long silence.
"We hope it'll help the Caliph spread wisdom to the world," said Maddie.
"How did you come to be in possession of this book?" the man asked.
"We were helping a friend," said Maddie, "and we got separated in a sandstorm."
"Ah, then I suppose you brought this book to Baghdad to gain a reward," said the man.
No, we didn't, said Jack. "It was our mission to give it to the Caliph."
"Surely you must be seeking some payment in exchange for this treasure," said the man. "Would you not like precious perfumes gathered from the sweetest flowers on earth?"
"No, thank you," said Maddie.
"Rubies as large as hen's eggs," said the man.
"No, thanks," said Jack.
"You would not accept the book's weight in gold," said the man.
"We don't need a reward, really," said Jack. "Since he likes books so much, why don't you just tell the Caliph to use his golden rubies to buy more of them?" said Maddie.
Again, there was silence. Then the man cleared his throat. When he spoke, his voice was gentle and familiar sounding.
"Look up at me, Jack and Maddie," he said.
Jack opened his eyes. He slowly lifted his head. First he saw gleaming gold slippers, then a long white robe with gold trim, and then a familiar face. Jack gasped. He couldn't believe his eyes. The man wasn't a scary person at all. The man was Mamoon.
Mamoon, said Maddie.
Yes, said Mamoon. I am very glad to see that you have safely arrived in Baghdad.
We're glad you're safe, too, said Maddie. We were worried about you.
I looked everywhere for you after the sandstorm, said Mamoon. Finally, I gave up my search and returned sadly to Baghdad. I assume you found your family.
Sure, said Maddie. We found them.
And you found your books, said Jack.
When we couldn't find you, we decided that we should give the book to the caliph.
Mamoon smiled. You still do not understand, do you? He said.
Understand what? Said Maddie.
I am Caliph Abdul al-Mamoon.
You're the caliph? Said Maddie. But how? What? Stammered Jack.
For many years I have wanted a book of Aristotle's wisdom, explained the caliph. I heard that such a book had been found in the city of Damascus, and I made arrangements to acquire it for my library. It was most important that it arrive here safely. I have long wished to travel again through the desert, as I did when I was a boy. So I disguised myself as a humble merchant and made the journey. My fellow travelers never knew my true identity.
Wow, whispered Jack.
You have shown me that you have a great respect for books and learning, said Caliph al-Mamoon, and you have also proven you have humble hearts. Before you join your family, I want to show you a very special place. I call it the House of Wisdom.
The House of Wisdom, breathed Jack. That sounds great.
It is my hope that the world will indeed find it great, said the caliph. Come. He started to leave the room. Jack and Maddie rose from the floor and hurried after him. Carrying the ancient book of Aristotle, the caliph led Jack and Maddie out of the room of the tree. His gold-trimmed robe billowed about him as he swept down the corridor. Every person he passed bowed low to the floor.
Another mystery solved, Maddie said to Jack. She quoted from Merlin's letter, "Greet a friend you once knew and a new friend to be."
Both friends are the same person, said Maddie, Mamoon from the desert and Caliph Abdullah al-Mamoon.
Right, said Jack, smiling.
The caliph led Jack and Maddie out the front doors of the palace. In the courtyard stood two camels with long poles attached to their saddles. Resting on top of the poles was a small carriage decorated with gold tassels and brass bells. Servants helped Jack, Maddie, and Caliph Abdullah al-Mamoon into the strange little carriage. Bells jingled as the camels began to move slowly through the courtyard. The caliph opened tiny shutters to let in air and sunlight. Jack looked out. Everyone bowed as the royal carriage passed by, the boys playing ball, the gardeners weeding flower beds, the women carrying pots. Jack had lots of questions about the House of Wisdom, but now that he knew their friend Mamoon was the mighty caliph, he felt shy. Even Maddie seemed to be at a loss for words as they rode past the date palms and the palace gardens.
"We are here," said the caliph as the camels came to a stop.
He helped Jack and Maddie out of the carriage. Then he led them up the steps of a large brick building.
"Welcome to the House of Wisdom," said the caliph, "a learning center for the entire world."
"What happens here?" asked Jack.
"Come, I will show you."
The caliph escorted Jack and Maddie through the front door and down a wide hallway.
"We have a laboratory for discovering new medicines," he said,
"and an observatory for viewing the stars and planets, but this is my favorite room of all." The caliph stopped before an arched doorway. He opened the door and led Jack and Maddie into a huge silent room.
"This is the library," he said in a hushed voice. "Even I must be very quiet here."
Late afternoon light slanted down from high open windows, streaming over bookshelves and colorful carpets. Men read at long tables. When the readers looked up and saw the caliph, they all started to rise.
"Please continue with your work. Do not mind us," the caliph said softly.
The men sat down again and returned to their reading and writing. The caliph pointed to a bearded man sitting by a window, hunched over a pile of papers. The man was writing furiously.
"That is al-Khwarizmi," whispered the caliph. "He is a truly great mathematician.
he has perfected the Indian way of writing numbers. The caliph pointed at numbers written on a board on the wall. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We call these the Arabic numerals, he said.
Arabic numerals, said Jack?
Yes, said the caliph, and Jack whispered to Maddie, we use the Arabic numerals too. They must have come from that guy. The caliph pointed to another man reading by the window. He is Al-Kindi. He is perhaps the most brilliant scientist and thinker in the world, whispered the caliph, but he's also very humble. He believes knowledge cannot belong to only one person or country. It belongs to all. The world grows wise only when wisdom is shared. I agree, and that is why I built this house.
I agree, too, whispered Maddie.
Me, too, said Jack.
Scientists and scholars from many countries come here to read and study and share their knowledge, whispered the caliph. We have thousands of books. They've all been copied by hand.
By hand, said Maddie. That's a lot of writing.
What kind of books, asked Jack.
Books of history, mathematics, geography, and medicine, said the caliph. But we also have a very special book of fantasy and wonder.
The caliph took a large, thick book down from a shelf. He rested it on a table and turned the pages to show Jack and Maddie. The book was filled with fancy writing and beautiful illustrations. There were pictures of Aladdin and Ali Baba, magic lamps, and flying carpets.
Oh, Tales from the Arabian Nights, said Maddie. We know those stories.
You do?
Wonderful, the caliph said with a smile. It seems someone from our land has traveled to yours and shared our stories. Perhaps someone will soon bring stories from your land back to us. That is the great power of a book, no?
Yes, said Maddie.
And I hope your land will hear of this book, too, someday, said the caliph. He held up the book of Aristotle's writings. After I have read it, I will have it copied so I can share its wisdom with the world. Thank you for helping me.
Sure, Jack said modestly. That was our mission.
I fear I must now return to my duty, said the caliph, but please, stay in the library. Read until you must go meet your family, and come back some day to visit me.
We'll try, said Jack.
Goodbye, Maddie. Goodbye, Jack.
Goodbye, Mamoon, Maddie said.
The mighty caliph gave them a warm smile and a deep bow. Then he left Jack and Maddie in his wondrous library.
Jack and Maddie looked around the big room. The scholars and scientists were all deep into their reading.
I can't believe Mamoon is the caliph, whispered Jack.
Remember that life is full of surprises, Maddie repeated from Merlin's letter.
Yeah, and return to the treehouse before the moon rises, Jack finished.
Oh, I almost forgot that part, said Maddie.
Me too, said Jack.
Shh, said one of the scholars and scientists.
Sorry, said Maddie.
Jack and Maddie looked up at the open window. The sky was pink. The sun would be setting soon.
We have to get back to the treehouse, Maddie whispered, before the moon rises.
I know, said Jack, but how?
He felt a moment of panic.
The treehouse is really far away, he thought. If we traveled on Beauty and Cutie, it would take a whole day and night to get there.
And what about sandstorms and bandits?
Jack looked at Maddie. She was smiling.
Magic, she mouthed.
Jack caught his breath and nodded. They both looked around to see if any of the scholars or scientists were watching.
They weren't.
Jack quietly slipped Teddy and Kathleen's book out of his bag. He and Maddie turned their backs to the others and opened the book to the table of contests.
Maddie pointed to Turn into Ducks.
Jack gave her a look.
Annie pointed to Fly Through the Air.
Yes, said Jack.
Shh, said a scholar.
Jack turned to the right page. He held up the book so they both could see.
Jack said the first line of the rhyme, Sail through the sky where you wish to go.
Maddie said the second,
Sawney Four, Sawney Row.
You must be quiet or you will have to leave the library, one of the scholars said grouchily.
Don't worry, we're going, said Maddie.
And a wind blew through the tall open window, fluttering the pages of the Arabian Nights book.
The scholars and scientists grabbed their papers before they blew away.
The wind picked up a corner of the small carpet Jack and Annie were standing on.
The carpet rippled.
Jack and Maddie fell forward. As they tried to stand, the carpet lifted off the floor.
Oh, cried all the scholars and scientists.
The carpet began floating up. It rose above the long tables. It rose above the shelves of books.
Everyone jumped out of their chairs and scrambled out of the way, shouting, "Help! Move! Watch out! Impossible! What's happening?" "Bye!" called Maddie. The carpet floated to the tall open window and glided out of the House of Wisdom. Chilly air blew against Jack and Maddie. Their headcloths flapped wildly as they clung to the edge of the carpet and sailed through the sky. "This is great!" cried Jack. "Really great!" shouted Maddie. The carpet soared over the House of Wisdom, over the Caliph riding back to his palace in his carriage, and over the camel stable. The carpet zipped over the green dome with a horse on top. It flew over the courtyard where the boys were still playing ball, over the third wall and past the green field and the grand avenue. The carpet flew over the second wall, the houses, the hospitals, and the 100 lions in the zoo. It flew over the first wall, the arched bridge, and the moat. The carpet zoomed over the bazaar with the maze of stalls, the shoemakers, potters, and weavers. It sailed high over the road to Baghdad. Below, Jack and Maddie saw the men driving donkey carts, the boys leading sheep, and the women carrying pots. The carpet flew faster and faster and faster over the river, the grazing fields, and the dunes with the whistling sands, over the red glowing desert, toward the setting sun and the small oasis in the middle of nowhere. The magic carpet slid smoothly onto the scrubby grass, near the small spring and the thorny shrubs, near the date palms and the rope ladder. The desert looked as if it were on fire with golden red light. Jack felt giddy. That was so fast, he said. I can't believe we made it all the way here. No kidding, said Maddie. The magic must have helped us stay on. She and Jack tried to stand. They teetered and fell against each other. Steady, said Maddie, giggling. You okay? Perfect, said Jack. He put his bag over his shoulder and staggered off the carpet. Then he and Maddie headed over to the tallest date palm. Jack pulled the rope ladder from behind the trunk and they climbed up. When they got inside the treehouse, Jack took out Merlin's letter. He glanced out the window one last time. The sun was gone. The carpet looked small and ordinary in the shadows beneath the palm tree. The desert looked vast and silent and lonely. A thin crescent moon had appeared in the sky. "Return to the treehouse before the moon rises," said Jack. "That was our last instruction from Merlin," said Maddie. "We're all done." Jack looked down at Merlin's letter. He pointed at the words, "Jack and Annie of Frog Creek." "I wish we could go home," he said. And the wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. And then everything was still, absolutely still. The Frog Creek woods were chilly in the afternoon air. Jack and Annie were dressed in their jeans and jackets again. Jack's shoulder bag was a backpack. "Good trip," Jack said simply. Maddie nodded. "Really cool," she said. "I guess we should get home," said Jack. "I have lots of homework to finish. Leave the research book, but don't forget to take Teddy and Kathleen's rhyme book for safekeeping," said Maddie. Jack reached into his backpack. He pulled out the book on the Golden Age of Baghdad and placed it on the treehouse floor. Then he threw his pack over his shoulder and climbed down the ladder. Maddie followed. Together they walked through the early spring woods. "We passed Merlin's second test," said Maddie. "We helped spread wisdom to the world. That's a pretty big deal." "Be humble," Jack reminded her. "Well, I guess Teddy and Kathleen's book did the hard stuff for us," Maddie said humbly. "I miss them," said Jack. "Me too," said Maddie, "but I think they might have been with us in Baghdad." "What do you mean?" said Jack. "Remember that servant girl and boy who took us to the Caliph?" said Annie. "They sort of came out of nowhere, and we never actually saw their faces, did we?" "No," said Jack. "You think?" Maddie shrugged. "Maybe." Jack smiled and took a deep breath. "Maybe," he said softly. 2 missions and 5 rhymes left, said Maddie. "I hope Merlin sends us for us again soon." "But not too soon," said Jack. "I need to do my homework first." Maddie laughed. "Math with Arabic numerals?" she said. "Right," said Jack. "And maybe tomorrow we'll go to the library and see if they have any books of Aristotle's wisdom." "Good idea," said Maddie. And a cool breeze rustled the trees, and Jack and Maddie hurried home.
And that's the end of that adventure from the Magic Treehouse. And that's the end of tonight's Reading with Rick episode. And we're going to do one more Reading with Rick. Tomorrow night is going to be our last night. Tomorrow is the last day of school, and that means you don't have to maybe go to bed so early. Maybe Mom and Dad will let you stay up later with no school to get ready for the next day. So I think that's a good time to end Reading with Rick. We'll talk about that more tomorrow, but tomorrow night will be the last one. I sure have enjoyed spending this time with you. We'll do it one more time tomorrow night, okay? I hope you join me then. Good night, everybody.